So thank you, Xavier, and thank you, Emilio, for inviting me to participate in this online conference. And thank you for the introduction. I should also like to say really that I'm what would be called a domain specialist, I think, in the diagram that George Brisica showed in the one of the opening presentations of the meeting yesterday. I'm an archaeologist, as my background indicates, but I work with IT specialists and conceptual modelers. And my talk is going to take us back to some of the issues discussed, I think, quite a lot yesterday, the theme of fair data and ontological modelling. And it's going to be in two parts, so I'm going to be fairly quick. An introduction, first of all, to where we started with this in ADS, and then a brief introduction to some of the current work in Ariadne. So first of all, you're all very familiar by now with this diagram, which has been shown multiple times, but I wanted to emphasize that I think in this flow there is an increasing difficulty, particularly for the heritage sector, and particularly when we come to reuse of data, that I don't think the sort of rights and license models really captures some of the challenges in reuse and how we need to encourage reuse in archaeology, which really rests on some of the earlier issues, and particularly not just descriptive metadata, but having a metadata and paradata that really does allow us to reuse data to understand it. These are some of the things that Jeremy Huggett has recently talked about in a publication as being missing from our data. And I also want to contrast FAIR with MEAN, which is how Isto Huvila from the University of Uppsala at a conference a couple of years ago described archaeological information as being miscellaneous, exceptional, arbitrary, and non-conformist. And I think we perhaps are all familiar with data sets that fall into that category. And I just highlight, I think, some of the issues that we face in the heritage sector in trying to make data fair. Not just the quantity of data, but finding it, joining it up, achieving interoperability, the lack of suitable data standards, the need for controlled vocabularies and ontologies, the importance of digital object identifiers, and issues, more qualitative issues, of how we identify quality data, the issues that I just mentioned of how we define adequate paradata, and in many cases, a more basic issue with a lack of clear rights statements about what we can do with data. So we conducted in Ariadne a user needs survey. This was done by Guntram Geyser at the Salzburg Research Institute. And it certainly highlighted the challenge and some of the issues. I won't go through this in huge detail, but these are some of the headlines that 94% of researchers agreed that data sets needed to be available online in an uncomplicated way, that 87% of researchers agreed that often they do not know what data is available for them because it's spread out over so many databases and repositories, that nearly three quarters of researchers consider it's important to have easy access to international data sets. And we must remember that a lot of heritage research raises international questions, not just those limited to national borders. And then the perceived lack of professional recognition and reward for sharing data, which I think many of us are familiar with in our institutional structures. And in many countries, the lack of an institutional or international repository for archaeological data is perceived as a barrier to data sharing. I think in archaeology is also a rather special case in the humanities, is that we've long had this tradition that our archives should be made available for others to reuse, primarily because of sort of primary data often being destroyed in the course of doing our research through excavation. And we need to be able to show how our interpretations are underpinned by the data sets, so that future researchers can challenge our interpretations and make further analyses. So I'm going to very briefly, for those of you not familiar, just introduce the ADS and how we've tried to address some of these challenges, in fact, now for some almost 30 years. We're the digital research infrastructure for the UK, although we're based at the University of York. We're a mandated archive for many UK funding agencies. We have about 14 staff, and we're self-funding in the sense that we have a business model based upon a charging policy of a one-off charge at the point of deposition of the data set, which is passed back to the research funder, whether that's a commercial developer funding archaeological excavation because of preventative archaeology, or whether they are a research body. And we provide, therefore, the data is free at the point of use, it's open access, and we provide access to now some 1.4 million thin records for the archaeology of the UK, plus over 60,000 now open access fieldwork reports, what's often known as the grey literature, and now over 1,800 full Project Digital archives. So a lot of files, a lot of data, but also the important figure there really is that in order to preserve the data, we have to carry out processes on that data to migrate it according to status as a core trust seal repository. So how have we tried to be fair? Well, first of all, we try and make sure that our data is findable, and that's quite a challenge with such a variety of data sets. We have a search button on our homepage, which takes you into a number of different sub-searches according to whether you're interested in thin metadata archives, what we call the library, which are textual reports. Our basic metadata is originated from Dublin Core, and it betrays our origins as part of the Arts and Humanities Data Service and the need to look at interdisciplinary interoperability. But we, over the years, have developed archaeological extensions to Dublin Core. And we try and provide easy access to our thin records via a faceted browse, which you start out with nearly the 1.4 million records, classified according to control vocabularies and approved schemes for what, where, and when. And then this in theory allows you to come down from that 1.4 million records, in this example, to just 70 reports, which might be of interest, assuming you're interested in the early prehistory of Greater London and wants to know what's been published in the grey literature. So that's by selecting particular facets down the side there. And that will then take you to a landing page within the library with the DOI, another important part of being fair, with an abstract of the report, and then to actually be able to click on the download link and download that report and read it. We also try to be interoperable by adhering to heritage standards. Some of these were mentioned indeed earlier in the conference, things like the MIDAS heritage standard, FISH. So here's the thesaurus of monument types from FISH, and we use this and a variety of other thesauri to provide metadata for our reports and other archives. Some of these have been manually entered terms, but some of these are derived from natural language processing of the reports from an earlier project, linking back to an earlier presentation today about the value of NLP. But as I say, this faceted browse is driven by, in this case, the what I'll focus on, five thesauri that have been developed over, hierarchical thesauri developed over many years. So if we expand, for example, the maritime thesaurus, you can see the hierarchy there with the different classifications of different type of vessels. And if I'm interested in particular in paddle steamers at the bottom, I can select that and come up then with 171 results, in this case drawn from the National Monuments record for Scotland from Campbell. So that allows interoperability, and all the data, as I say, is made under a clear rights statement. So our archives are all available under a CC BY license. And they are reused, and I think this is a key point here. For one part of the information that we provide for every archive is the usage statistics from the menu on the left hand side, and then you can see, for example, from this archive that there's been some 1500 downloads in total since the archive was released in 2011. And I'll just highlight a couple of surveys that emphasise the importance of reuse. This was a survey done by the Research Information Network on comparing the use of data centres in a number of domains within the UK. And for ADS, 84% of respondents said that our existence had had an impact on data sharing, that it reduced the time for required for data access and processes, that over half believed it presented new intellectual opportunities, and over half said that it permitted new types of research, and nearly everyone thought the data was very or quite important for their research. So that's all very pleasing, of course. It makes it difficult, though, in the way that we make data available, to know what people do with the data, because it is open access. We rely on surveys to capture what people do. And this is another survey. We don't often measure the value of FAIR data, of reusable data in the heritage sector in economic terms. And this is quite an important argument, though, when we want to convince funding bodies, particularly government politicians, as why we should be making data FAIR. So this was an independent survey carried out by Neil Beegree from charlesbeegree.com, digital preservation specialist, and John Houghton from the Centre for Strategic Economic Studies at the University of Victoria in Australia, who has developed a specialism in trying to measure the value of heritage assets in general, and did a study of a number of digital repositories. And he compared costs that we supplied for the preparation of archives, which came to 1.2 million on average per annum. So that was the £698,000 was money from in ADS deposit charges in effect, and the 465 was contributed by the depositors in time spent in preparing their archives for deposit. The direct use value of that was gratifyingly positive. It's 1.4 million per annum, but it's actually, that's just in an annual snapshot, and it's the efficiency gains in being able to access data from users that the key figures. And there you can see that from the user's point of view, there are considerable gains, and this is from not having to go to multiple repositories, often not online repositories, to try and get hold of data. And this equated to some 7 hours per week for the average person consulted, and meant that in terms of measured over a 30-year period, there's potential for a £1 investment providing up to £8.3 return, which is a pretty high figure, certainly for the heritage sector. So I now want to turn to the second part of my talk, and so I sort of describe the situation in the UK. I want to talk a little bit about how we sort of extend this sort of approach at a European level, and what work we've been doing in Ariadne, which actually also has a long prehistory going back to this rather strange diagram from Henrik Johansson from the Danish Cultural Agency from an early CIA conference representing these multiple octopi joining up archaeological data sets across Europe. And we did an early experiment in Daria, joining up a number of repositories. This rather colourful diagram shows the challenge of trying to match period terms across Europe. And then on the right-hand side, a project we did with partners in North America in TDAR, a transatlantic archaeological gateway, trying to match North American and UK archaeology. This has been taken forward in Ariadne, which many of you will be familiar with, now with 41 partners, 23 countries, 4 international partners, with good but not complete coverage across Europe. And this is the sort of vision, really, for Ariadne, extending on the vertical axis in terms of international coverage, extending on the horizontal axis in terms of the richness of metadata, moving on from legacy metadata through Dublin Core, developing application profiles for specialist forms of data, and using domain ontologies, CDOC most notably. And through a combination of these, addressing complexity in archaeological data through this diagonal line, moving on from flat thesauri to more complex models of knowledge. And so in Ariadne, as you can imagine, with multiple partners across Europe, we not just don't deal with the normal challenges that archaeologists can't agree on what to call things, but also that they use different languages. And so there's the multilingual complexity as well. We use CDOC CRM and its extensions, which has been mentioned many times over these 2 days, to achieve that integration, and a particular development of that is in effect a subset of CDOC, what we're calling the AOCAT, developed by Carla McGeaney, who we heard from yesterday, as well as colleagues in Forth, and with domain specialists such as myself supplying input as well, to provide extensions for archaeology. So this is what we call this Ariadne data model, and it's the simple form of the data model focuses around really that this classic what, where, when, and for what. We've agreed to align every country's individual vocabularies to map them, rather not align them, map them to the Getty AAT. For where, we use the WGS84 geospatial standard longitude and latitude. And for when, because archaeologists certainly can't agree on how long periods go on for, and indeed for different countries, for example, the Iron Age or indeed the Viking Age, cover different absolute time spans. So when we use a period term, we define how we use it in the system Periodo, which is a NEH-funded North American project that we're collaborating with. So this is the portal. I'm going to focus, don't have time to really demonstrate its power, but I'm going to focus on the what. And this is the portal developed in the first phase of Ariadne. It's now being refined and extended by SND, our colleagues in Sweden, to develop a presentation of some of these facets, particularly adding some GIS functionality to the where. But if we look at what, and indeed if you start to type in a subject in the type and hope box, as we call it, the Google type and hope box, then the expansion of the term comes up using terms derived from the Getty thesaurus. And this enables both query expansion, but will also, and much more in Ariadne Plus, will allow us to support multilingualism by allowing searches in particular languages and drawn from thesauri in other languages which have been mapped to Getty. So I was typing in brooch because I happen to be interested in this particular artifact type, and I've selected ring brooches, which has allowed me to go from several million records down to just five hits where somewhere in the metadata brooch is mentioned. And indeed, if I select a particular one of those links, you can see there that the ring brochures is indeed has been entered or produced by NLP as part of the subject metadata there. And but again, the key is that Ariadne is just providing a finding aid and allowing users to access the actual resource through a few mouse clicks. So in this example, again, it is an ADS resource. So clicking on the link takes me to the report of a great literature report for some work done at RAF Lakenheath in Suffolk, the DOI for the report, the brief metadata about it with the author metadata down here, and right down at the bottom is the annular brooch, early medieval, which has been mapped to ring brooch in the Getty thesaurus. And I can, clicking on the link, I can download the actual report. So that ring brooch is through the Getty, and this example, it has very few language expansions, but for some terms, Getty has translations into several scores of languages, which will support that multilingualism. So in summary, to draw together some of the threads I've been talking about, I think the heritage sector has built up quite a lengthy experience in making data fair, even indeed before FAIR principles were invented, even indeed before Google was invented. But we are a sector with early adopters, but we still have quite a long way to go in extending this across all data, across all countries. And I think, as we've heard emphasized by many speakers, this work rests on data standards, on ontologies. It rests on the value of quality metadata. And it can only be achieved by community and international efforts. And it can only be achieved through collaboration between domain and IT specialists, which is why conferences such as this are important. But what we need to think about, and it's a topic that's been addressed particularly in one of the working groups in CIADA at the moment, is what's missing in our metadata, which tends to be derived from the professional data standards and ontologies. But how far is that adequate to support the needs of many of our user groups when it's derived from a particular domain specialism field? And we've gone down a route of a very objective recording of archaeological data, as we see it objective, but sometimes that misses the paradata, the things that aren't recorded in the metadata. And that goes back to the recent paper by Jeremy Hoggett that I'd recommend. So thank you very much for your attention.